Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's July the 17th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, the staff here at WILL will talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, they'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. And don't forget, just after the bottom of the hour, they'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss today's global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
I'm Tom Rogers. It looks like a down day pretty much across the board on the Chicago Board of Trade. Wheat had shown some mixed trading earlier in the day on some continued worries about dry, hot weather in parts of the wheat growing areas, but the wheat finished the day down almost as much as the other commodities, although corn and soybeans finished sharply lower. September wheat in Kansas City closed down 4¾ cents at 490¾. September wheat in Chicago settled at 393, down 4½ cents. The December down a nickel at 412½. In the corn pit, September corn ended down 9 cents a bushel at 251¾. December down 8¾. March down 7¾. December down 8¾. And in the beans, a 13-cent drop in the nearby contract for August, 590 a bushel at the close of trade today at the settlement. September was down 13½, and the November contract down 13¾ cents. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Tom.
What was it with the soybeans? We knew that traders were going to look at the weather and say that the extended forecast was calling for maybe cooler temperatures, a little bit of relief. Yet that may not have been the only factor as far as the sell-off.
Well, that was the main catalyst to give reason to start the downward slide, but market has been in a wide trading range for over a year. If you look at the November bean chart, we've dipped down in this 580 area, found support, and we've moved up into the 630, 640 areas and found resistance. And, you know, you can go clear back to almost a year and a half ago on this particular individual contract, but we sort of failed to poke out the previous highs that we made in May there, and we're getting a little bit of relief weather-wise. Exports aren't real strong, and so that gave reason for the market to roll over here in the last week. Then here in the last couple of trading sessions, we sort of failed to hold support, and we're running into some fun selling for say as we move below some moving averages and see the momentum indicators turn on the sell signals here. The thing about the beans is we got to remember that August makes beans. Here we are in July. Corn is critical as we go through the pollination phase, but the beans, it's either do or die come August.
And speaking of corn, you mentioned that we're in a critical stage for that, and similar losses, maybe even a little bit more if you look at it proportionally. Is it the same weather catalyst, and the technicals took it from there?
Yeah, it's we'll know a little bit more pinpoint region by region here this afternoon at 3 once the weekly crop conditions report's released. The Eastern Belt's going to show some improvement with the recent rains we received, for those who are fortunate enough to receive those. And the Western Belt's going to show another big drop. We work with several individuals out west, especially guys with irrigation, and irrigation's not even keeping up at all. You know, they're kind of seeing some unique situations where usually you keep giving it water and it stabilizes, and it's not even stabilizing. So we'll see what this afternoon's numbers show on that. The trade's looking for a 1-3% drop out of a good, excellent category for the corn and beans. If it's more than that, it'll be supportive. The wheat, spring wheat's expected to see about 5% deterioration there. But two, in the corn, if you go back in history, a year ago in this time window, we put the top in, we rolled over and went lower. If you look at the long-term seasonals, if there's no real weather threat clear across the Midwest, then the tendency is to roll lower and through here. So those were sort of factors that said maybe this 280 was enough for now. During the day session here, there were some stops under 75, got those under 72 and 70. There was three levels of sell stops being activated today, and we saw some liquidation there. Midday, they were sellers of, the funds were sellers of about 8,000 contracts. I imagine it's going to be more than that once all said and done because the funds are long, the marketplace, net long, that is. And so as these technical indicators promote sell signals and they're a purely technical trading fund, they're probably under some liquidation here. Now, what's to say is this afternoon's report, if it can show maybe a little bit more deterioration, maybe we can get some type of turnaround Tuesday for tomorrow.
Now, traders were looking in the wheat market early on at the negative weather picture out west and out north and the wheat growing areas, and yet by the end of the day, the choppy trade during midday had fallen lower.
Yeah, those dry areas are expected to get a little bit of relief short term. You know, if we show more than a 5% drop in that spring wheat area, they'll have a whole different outlook come in the evening trade, if not tomorrow. Spring wheat, sort of the driving force right here. There's some ideas that maybe the spring wheat price could even go on up towards the $6 level when it's all said and done. Kansas City is going to be a follower after, and Chicago is probably going to be the next follower of that. We did price in a little bit of Egypt business. They bought over 120,000 tons of U.S. Soft white wheat. Then they did buy a little bit more Russian wheat. So that's going to be step two there is this demand. On these breaks in here, demand needs to come forward and sort of support these breaks. Over the near term in the Chicago market, we had a reversal to the upside. Then today we had a reversal to the downside. So I'd say watch Friday's lows and today's highs, and I would go with the breakout, whichever way it goes from there.
All right. What is this all going to mean for producers? What should they be looking at right now?
Well, that's a good question. I wish I could. I should. I would have. But it's been real tough marketing cash grain here over the last 2 months, particularly because as the market has moved higher here or has remained firm, the commercial has widened out the basis for the products here that we raise. And so I would be inclined to look for any additional strength in here if they don't widen the basis out much further to get grain that needs to be marketed prior to this fall, especially commercial storage, pretty well priced. Because I feel if the weather goes ahead and cooperates and the funds decide to liquidate, it's going to be awful hard for the market to put in a big rally here unless we get a big bean rally in August. So we've been sort of encouraging guys to continue to sell what needs to be sold. But this fall, we'd probably be a pretty big buyer. We feel once we get into harvest and the stuff starts to find the home and the potential demand down the road, we would be a pretty good buyer with the idea that prices could firm back into 2007, if not into 2008. So I think it's just a matter of sort of sitting down. Each individual is a little bit different. Our main concern is commercial store having to pay a lot of storage, and that'd be the first grain to get marketed as we see these bounces materialize through the rest of the growing season.
Let's take a very quick look at the Merck. Hogs wound up on the upside, bellies, though, down, and cattle finished down as well. How are futures comparing to cash there?
Well, the August contract in the hogs found a little support from some higher cash bids, ideas that we might support this cash market here with the hot weather slowing down movement and then maybe talk of less weight gains and so forth on a short-term scale. The actual lean dead X in August is a discount to where the actual cash average is. So as we approach August and through here, you look for those to make an attempt to move somewhat together. The cattle market struggled. The Western Belts looking at 81, if not 80, cutouts dropped. Here in the east, we saw some 83, 84-cent trade, but they're going to watch the weather mark, the western market and go off that. Weather-wise, the fear is that if these temperatures do stay around or as we go over the next week, they're fearful that we're going to find out that this demand has slowed down.
Okay.
Consumer consumption of beef typically slows down during the hot summer.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Grain Field Marketing in Normal, Illinois. He joins us every Monday on the Closing Market Report and Monday mornings during our Opening Market Report.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
At the bottom of the hour, a meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago joins us for a look at ag weather. Look, the forecast from Mike Sola for tonight calls for partly cloudy skies, a few showers and thunderstorms in northern Illinois and Indiana and western Illinois, but clear otherwise and muggy, lows ranging from 64 in northwest Illinois to 74 in southern Indiana.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason, away this week on assignment in the Ukraine. Well, up next, for the third year in a row, an agricultural engineer from the University of Illinois has gone to China. It is part of an American Soybean Association effort to grow export demand, as you'll hear, for U.S. crops. The Chinese raise half of the world's pigs, and about 80% of them are grown, quote, in the backyard. The other 20% is the reason a delegation of University of Illinois academics made a trip to China and have been doing so for the better part of two decades. The trip is a cooperative effort between the U of I and the American Soybean Association.
The purpose, of course, is to work with livestock producers to tell them how to perhaps improve growing conditions, working on buildings, ventilation and environment and so on, so that they can be more efficient hog producers and therefore, enhance soybean markets.
Well, that's Ted Funk. He's an extension agricultural engineer at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Now, Funk and three others, including the dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, made the trip to China. The dean, Bob Easter, has been doing so since 1988. On that first trip, he says he worked to teach the Chinese how to use soybean meal in swine diets.
I've been doing that now for many years. It evolved in 1994 into a course, a short course, that now is a 2.5-day program that involves several faculty from the University of Illinois, Dr. Mike Ellis from Animal Science, Dr. Ted Funk from Ag and Biological Engineering, and Dr. Larry Firkins from the College of Veterinary Medicine. Our purpose is our overarching purpose of this program is to modernize or to assist in the modernization of the Chinese swine industry with the realization that a modern swine industry inevitably turns to corn and soybean meal as the diet basis for their diets.
The growth in the Chinese hog, aquaculture, and poultry industries over the last decade, says Bob Easter, has made it the number one importer of U.S. soybeans. He's seen many dramatic changes over the years in China. The biggest factor for the livestock industry has been urbanization. Large metropolitan centers are serviced differently than rural developments. Ted Funk and Bob Easter visited three very large swine operations.
One operation that we worked with, one company in Guangdong province, west of Hong Kong, 27 farms. We visited one of their smaller units, 1,500 sows, and I have to say that the quality of the animals, the quality of management was world class. They were certainly very different from what would have seen several years ago. I fully expect that there will continue to be a development in this industry in China. As the country becomes more affluent, the demand for meat will undoubtedly continue to grow, and the pressure for feed grains, both the energy source, corn and soybeans, as the source of protein, will continue to develop. And so I'm very optimistic about the future of this market.
That was Bob Easter. He's the dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He and three colleagues made an early summer trip to teach in China. The trip is sponsored by the American Soybean Association. Well, from China, where red meat has become far more popular, and University of Illinois Extension specialists have been working to develop corn and soybean markets into the livestock industry, we move to the Midwest and the Donald Danforth Plant Sciences Center and its mission to feed the people of the world. It was 1998 when former President Jimmy Carter delivered the keynote address in St. Louis, launching plans for the Danforth Center. The president said, "As we stand on the brink of the millennium, there's no greater challenge ahead than to feed the world's population and to ensure the health of our children, and to accomplish that without further degradation of the earth that sustains us." Well, 3 years later, in 2001, the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center opened in St. Louis. It was built in part by financial gifts from the Danforth Foundation, the Monsanto Fund, that's a philanthropic foundation, and a tax cut from the state of Missouri. The center works in alliance with the University of Illinois, the University of Missouri, Purdue University, Washington University, St. Louis, and the Missouri Botanical Garden. This alliance allows scientists and students at these academic institutions to cooperate across traditional boundaries, like state and national lines. Cassava Research, says the Danforth Plant Science Center's Director of Public Relations, Rob Rose, is one of the early success stories. Rose says this research echoes Jimmy Carter's call to the aid of the poorest nations of the globe.
Poverty in Africa is a big deal, and I think globally you see countries marshaling resources to address not only health issues there, but poverty reduction and giving people the opportunity to plant more food so they can increase their food production is really going to be a big deal.
The root of the cassava tree is consumed in many tropical areas of the world. Danforth Center research on cassava is just one of dozens. Many are rooted in the cultural practices of the Midwest, where farmers grow corn, soybeans, and wheat. The research focuses on four primary areas: developing new materials and products from plants, adapting plants for environmental stresses, enriching the nutritional value of foods, and controlling plant pests and pathogens. Well, the Danforth Center was established in part to anchor biotechnology in the Midwest. As a not-for-profit collaborative scientific research facility, Rose says its biggest success so far may be gathering and garnering acceptance of biotechnology around the globe.
I think the biggest success that we've had really has been the PhDs, the visiting PhDs, the postdocs that have come to the Danforth Center. They have actually come from over 20 different countries, and they come to the center for 2, 3, 4 years at a time, and then they go back to their homeland, they go back to their home country that sponsored them, and they take the knowledge that they've learned, and they bring that to their country. So I think that is a huge success. I think that transference of knowledge helps to further the biotechnology industry, because it builds acceptance and understanding. It's no longer this black box of concern. I think that's been a huge benefit, not only to St. Louis, but I think also to the biotech industry as a whole.
The Danforth Center, in its first 5 years of operation, produced more than 150 peer-reviewed white papers and has applied for and received a number of U.S. patents. It is one of the reasons Rob Rose believes the stated goal in 1998 of making the Midwest a mecca for biotechnology by establishing the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center has been reached. And finally today, we'll wrap up with something a little closer to home. Dale Latz, Farm Business Management Specialist from the U of I, joins us to talk about land prices and whether paying $5,000 makes sense. Paying close to $5,000 an acre for farmland just does not pencil out, says University of Illinois Extension Farm Management Specialist Dale Latz.
For the farm operator that's trying to buy land and pay for the land out of the earnings from the farm, it's obviously impossible to do that. You would either need, you know, a very large down payment if you've got a lot of cash, or a lot of other acres or off-farm income to support that land payment. And again, with the you know, kind of continued increase or maybe a little bit of leveling off of land prices, but it is at, you know, that $5,000 acre value or something like that, that it's just very difficult to, or it's impossible to pay for that out of earnings from the farm. But it always has been that way. It's just in a worse situation now. So, you know, you either need, again, good off-farm income or a lot of other acres to pay for it or a lot of cash down payment, you know, to make that work.
It's not so good for beginning farmers or those looking to expand. On the other hand, Dale Latz says a producer approaching retirement age without a family member wanting to continue the farm might just see the high price of land as an opportunity.
And you get in some of these areas of the state, in the northern area, DeKalb County or something like that, where we're talking, you know, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 an acre ground, you know, and you sit back and pencil out what you're making off that farming it versus what you could cash it in. And even if you pay taxes on it and didn't exchange it, you know, you still can come out with quite a bit of cash to invest in other places and increase your cash flow or trade it like a lot of them do for more acres, you know, in other areas of the state to increase your cash flow also. So, no, I think we are seeing land coming on the market by some farmers, landowners, maybe close to retirement or maybe even not, but just seeing, you know, this is a asset that's bringing a good price right now and now might be the time to sell it.
Maybe, but there's always been something very American about owning a piece of property, especially farmland. It lends a sense of certainty to a family, a place, a home that will always be just that, the home place. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's 2:29. We'll, in a few moments, hopefully, get a look at the cash grain market from the people down at the Andersons in Champaign, having a bit of a problem getting a hold of them right now. But in advance of that, we'll move the schedule around a little bit, and we'll also eventually later talk to Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. They'll give us an idea of the weather picture. And in the meantime, though, let's start off with a look at AM 580 local news.
With this look at AM 580 news, I'm Jim Meadows. Illinois state officials have opened 130 cooling centers throughout the state to help people who need to get out of the heat. In Champaign County, the cooling center is at the Department of Human Services building at 801 North Walnut in Champaign, near the railroad tracks. It's open from 8:30 to 5:30, Mondays through Fridays. A Danville City Council committee begins discussion tomorrow on a proposed smoking ban in that city's bars and restaurants. But Mayor Scott Eisenhower says the talk at tomorrow's ordinance subcommittee meeting is preliminary, and there is no formal proposal on the table. He says subcommittee members will start going through hundreds of surveys on the smoking issue taken from the Danville public and business owners. Surveys are still coming in, and Eisenhower says so far public sentiment is split on a smoking ban, while bar owners are firmly opposed. Indiana Senator Evan Bayh says the Democratic Party should focus on middle-class voters. He says Democrats have focused much of their attention on the needs of lower-income Americans. He says if he decides to run for president, he'll focus his campaign on creating opportunities for the middle class. State officials in Illinois say a new estimate shows 88% of front-seat occupants in vehicles are now wearing their seatbelts on Illinois roads. That's an all-time high, and up 2% from last year and 12% from 2003. Officials also say the number of people killed on state roads continues to decline slightly. They credit the numbers to a 2003 state law allowing motorists to be pulled over and ticketed solely for not wearing their seatbelts. Champaign County Crime Stoppers is celebrating 20 years of encouraging citizens to give authorities their anonymous tips about unsolved crimes. Local Crime Stoppers Board Chairman John Hecker says tips from their hotline have helped solve more than 1,100 cases and recovered more than $1 million in stolen goods and illicit drugs. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
And I'm Tom Rogers. This is the closing market report for Monday, July 17th. And joining us now for a look at the cash grain market is Wyatt Muse of the Andersons in Champaign. Good afternoon, Wyatt.
Good afternoon.
Let's take a look, first of all, how basis has been.
All right. Old crop basis has been fairly flat recently, starting to come back a little bit at the end of June and beginning of July, but over the past week or so, not a lot of activity. Most of the grain that's left on farm at this point will probably be carried on through and delivered at the beginning of September. New crop basis has been stable also, but will probably continue to widen out as the crop is made, especially if we see more rains and come out with a pretty decent crop.
Anything that might be prompting farmers to sell in the immediate future down the line? What would do that?
Well, people getting good rains and seeing their corn pollinate would certainly encourage some sales. I know the board slipped pretty heavily today, but I still think we're at decent price levels in the mid-240s right now for fall delivery grain. And if you got rains and your crop's shaping up all right, there's no reason not to make another incremental sale.
What do you expect for the opens tomorrow?
Opens tomorrow, too early to tell, but we'll see what the crop condition rating says here in about a half hour, and depending where that is, we'll really drive what the board does tomorrow.
And what are your prices?
Cash corn today, $2.35, fall delivery, $2.43, cash soybeans, $5.73, and fall, $5.86.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was going to say our cash wheat is $3.43.
All right. Thanks a lot, Wyatt.
Bye.
Wyatt Muse is with the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. He joins us every Monday with cash grain analysis, or at least somebody from the Andersons joins us with the cash grain market look on the closing market report. Now we go over to the Chicago office of Chesapeake Energy and Mark Russo with a look at our growing areas weather for this afternoon. Good morning or good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Tom.
We saw the market react quite a bit to the promise of a little bit cooler weather in the corn and soybean belt. What are you looking at as far as the immediate and longer-term picture?
Well, in the short term, we do see heat for several more days here across the Midwest, while the northern areas will cool down briefly tomorrow. The entire belt will return to heat Wednesday on into Thursday, before then cooler temperatures working their way into the Corn Belt during the Friday, Saturday, Sunday period, and that will continue into the early portion of next week. And it looks like during that cool down, temperatures will revert back to more normal levels, which will equate to highs generally in the 80s, with lows dropping into the 60s and 70s.
How about the weather over to the north and west, where the wheat growing areas are? They're still dealing with some excessive heat, I guess.
Oh, in a major way, Tom. Yeah. Over this past weekend, we saw unbelievably hot temperatures across the Northern Plains spring wheat belt. In fact, high temperatures broke all-time records across areas such as South Dakota. In particular, Pierre, South Dakota, got up to a blistering hot 117 degrees, which is an all-time record for that station, and almost surpassed the state's record high temperature of 120 degrees. And, you know, just incredibly hot conditions. Now, they will be cooling off here over the next several days, but it looks like as we go into next week, another round of heat across the Northern Plains spring wheat belt. And accompanying that, continued very dry conditions, and so the crop there just continues to be hurt in a major way.
But hopefully a little relief coming there eventually. How about anything else you're looking at around the nation or the world?
Well, across our major production areas here across the globe, we continue to be in good shape across China. That area continues to get periodic rain and a lack of heat. Also, we're seeing favorable monsoon conditions across India, helping the grain and oilseed areas there. One area that, though, is having some problems is the EU. We are seeing pretty hot temperatures, especially across Western Europe, and dryness expanding in the parts of both Western and Eastern Europe, and that's causing crop conditions to go downhill across our EU nations.
All right. We'll be looking forward to the cooler weather.
My pleasure, Tom.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, and that's today's closing market report. You can join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 Central for the pre-opening market report, and you can hear today's futures analysis as well as the cash grain report and our weather forecast on the internet. Go to WILL.UIUC.edu and then click on AM and then agriculture, or you could take a shortcut. You could just put in your browser WILL Ag. willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Tom Rogers.